sunbathing here with Elizabeth Marshall Thomas and Bill Russell in beautiful Peterborough, New Hampshire. And we were just talking about the Kalahari. We were talking about what turned out to probably be European fairy tales. So much of what you have told us over the years in your many books, and now with an autobiography, are ways that things fit together. Now, I think that you were starting to say something on one way.
Well, I think in that context, we were talking about those little things.
Yes.
And it probably was one of those little things that has, you know, defined your career and a good part of your life, which is writing.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And at some point,
it's not a very little thing. For some of us, it's
well,
a pretty
but,
big
no,
thing.
Well, but no, the starting point, you know, what triggered that?
What started it?
Triggered the writing. What was the first thing you wrote?
Well, it's not a very good story, but I'll tell it. My parents wanted me to major in English because I was a woman and you're supposed to be able to
teach.
Teach or talk winningly at a cocktail party about poetry and art and stuff like that.
Winningly, yes.
I wanted to major in biology, and they talking about rodents and snakes is bacteria is not winning. Okay. So that was, they had my best interest at heart. That's the way things were done back then. So I majored in English, but one of the things that if you did major in English, you could take a writing course for credit, and only one, but you could take it. And I did very well in those courses, and my grades went up. So, I mean, my cumulative went up. Otherwise, I mean, I was glad to get a C plus or a B minus. That was thrilling, you know, so long as it wasn't a D. And I wasn't that great a student.
You were not passionate about it, were you?
No, but I entered one of my teachers said, why don't you enter this writing contest that they had? And so I did. And two people, it was the Mademoiselle magazine, which is now defunct, but they had this. Mm-hmm. And Sylvia Plath and I both went together.
And not
bad company. And she did the editor. Then you can be an intern editor. Mm-hmm. And she chose to do that, and I chose not to do that because it was in New York. And anyway, but that was a big start. And then one day, then when I graduated, Steve and I were by then together. We were met when we were 18. We were definitely going to get married. The dean of Radcliffe, I went to Radcliffe, he went to Harvard. The dean of Radcliffe wanted to talk to all the graduating seniors about their future plans. And my mother went with me. I'm not sure why. Maybe she hoped I had plans, or maybe she wanted to protect me from the dean. I don't know.
But maybe she wanted a clue.
So the dean said, to my surprise, what are you going to do after graduation? And oh my God, I'm supposed to know. So I said, the only thing I was good at was writing. So I said, I guess I'll be a writer. And she exploded. She said, you guess you'll be a writer? Have you any idea, any notion of how hard it is to be a writer? And I said, well, I won this contest and my agent, and I have a book contract, and my agent thinks I could be a writer.
And
that was one of the best moments. That was a very good moment.
So what was that book?
That was The Harmless People. That was the book I wrote about the Bushmen the first time when I came back after having been there three times.
And it was, so on graduation, you already had the agent of the book contract.
Yeah.
Was that enough to stuff her up, the dean?
Oh, yeah, it did. She said, why didn't anyone tell me? Well, I didn't know you were supposed to tell her.
But. Well, you also didn't know that you couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm, yes, yeah, exactly.
Well, and you had a good story to tell.
And I had a story to tell. Subject matter always helps. I mean,
if you have
unusual subject matter, it is much more interesting than...
You do say in the autobiography, and as you're thinking about, and you have a whole chapter on writing.
Yeah.
That... Tell me about what the conscious and the subconscious do quite differently in the process. I think anybody who yearns to write, aspires to write, thinks they can write, can use this information.
Well, at one time, when I was young, but around the time my kids were very little, I had a nowhere job, a nothing job, and I wasn't really, didn't have time to write, but and I was stressed. It made me stressed and frustrated. So I was seeing a psychoanalyst. And then the book was published.
Which book?
The Harmless People. This is just when my son was born. And the editor of the New Yorker said to my agent, why didn't you show the book to me? And she said, I have had shown it. I'd sent it in, but nobody took it. So
this wouldn't be just any old editor.
This was William Shawn. Yeah.
The best editor ever
in the world. Yeah. And he said, well, would you write another book for us? And what?
Well, being a writer now.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, where's the psychoanalyst coming?
I'm coming. Okay. I was seeing the psychoanalyst, but I spoke with Mr. Shawn, and he decided pastoralists in Uganda would be a good thing to write about. Okay, I was getting ready to go to Uganda. Told the psychoanalyst, he said, don't go. You should stay and finish your analysis. Give all that up. And I just said, I'll write you when I get there.
and
I didn't go because, I mean, how?
You didn't go.
I didn't go back to him.
You did what he suggested.
I didn't go back to anybody. I quit psychoanalysis and went to Uganda. And that worked out very well.
Yeah.
Okay, then I was thinking about what is the unconscious to him? And it struck me that it's a colon filled with stuff that has to be got out and flushed. Okay? Uh-huh. To me, it's like a lung that draws in stuff that you live from. And so what is the unconscious to me? It's like a lung, and that's why. And I use it all the time. I mean, it's what makes my writing move forward. And it's what you can just let it do it for you. I mean, whoever is in there, pull out these surprises and these good sentences and things like that.
Especially if you've had the experience of an editor like William Shawn.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Oh, his edit was unbelievable. When I read the thing, it was exactly my work. I mean, it was exactly as if I had done the whole thing myself. And I just hadn't realized how good I was.
Well, that is really important. We see a lot of books. We read a lot of books. And the one of the many things that jumps out, probably the most important, is how few are edited or well edited. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are copy editors, which is different, and a lot of that doesn't seem to get done. But time and time again, you know, good content, bad editing.
Yes,
And you get through it, and you get the sort of the point. But it could have been much richer, much better. That editing function, it would seem, is underappreciated, and it's desperately needed.
Desperately
for the writer as well as the reader.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
Well, you speak then of the subconscious as the lung. What does this little neocortex thing do for us?
The front brain, if that is what it is,
yeah.
That has to make the rules. How you're going to write this, what you can and can't do, what you should and shouldn't do. That's for the conscious mind, I think.
Is that part of the editing process, or is that different?
That's part of the creative process, I think, because don't use weak words. Don't write weak sentences, although I do, but I shouldn't.
Write strong sentences.
Strong sentences. I should write strong sentences, and I try to.
And you do.
is this a dialogue, or is it sequential? Does the subconscious do something, and then the conscious comes in and applies rules to it? Or is this this constant process for you going back and forth between them?
I don't find a back and forth. I find the unconscious mind is pushing stuff through the strainer of the rules. So that as you're obeying the rules, as you are writing what your unconscious has just told you to write.
Does it, as with experience, does it change as you do more and more of it?
You mean
does the writing change as life changes when you've had something that chastens you here and encourages you there? Does writing also have these billowing effect that you've learned something from some other experience, some other writing? Does the writing, literally grow as would an orchid unfold? Does the writing itself change?
That's a fascinating question. I'm not sure I can answer it.
Ask your unconscious.
Things pop through from the unconscious that you wouldn't have, your conscious brain would have never thought of them. and they can contribute. So it does build. Yes, it does. It builds in that way, just as you were describing.
Has it gotten easier for you, or harder, or different, or none of the above?
Well, about the same. I have writer's block from time to time, and that's no fun. But
you went through a whole stretch that you didn't write at all.
Yeah, I just did other jobs.
And there was a reason for that.
Well, beginning in Nigeria, we then went to Nigeria after Uganda. I wrote the Uganda book. Went to Nigeria.
Were both of your children born by now?
Oh yeah, they were six and seven. So
they're big enough that you can leave home.
Oh yeah. Well, I took them when they were very little to Uganda, 2 and 4, and because they were portable, you could take them around.
By 6 and 7, they're less portable.
Well, we went to Ibadan. They went to a school and so forth. But the Civil War broke out, and the unrest was appalling. I won't go into the whole thing. It was a war, civilians in a war zone.
Let's come back in just a moment so that we can hear you in Nigeria when we return with Elizabeth Marshall Thomas.